This is Jen Zaman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. On today's edition of Jaws of Justice Radio, family members of incarcerated citizens tell about their struggle to get their loved ones the medical care they need to survive. Later in the show, we will open the phone lines for your stories and what you did to help your loved ones behind bars. Have those pads and pencils ready for our calendar in the middle of the show. And as always, the 420 Drug War News after the show. Now, here's our host, Melvin Merritt, and his guest.
Good morning. You are in tune to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. In the studio with me is Miss Clara Fuller. Her and I will be talking about the inferior medical care and the lack of medical care in the Missouri Department of Correction. Also, Miss Helena Law will be on the phone as well. And I want to introduce our guest this morning. Good morning, Miss Clara Fuller. Welcome for being. I want to thank you for being here on air with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
One of the first things that we're going to talk about as well is that you have a loved one that is incarcerated. And tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, my brother, George Fuller, he has been incarcerated since 1991. And basically, as far as the medical care is concerned, the DOC waited until 1996 to inform George that he had contracted hepatitis C. So we consistently contacted the DOC, state representatives, and state senators from 1996 to December of 2004 before the DOC agreed to send George to South Central Correctional Center for advanced hepatitis C treatment.
I see. So how did he contract this virus?
I'm not exactly sure of how he's contracted it. A lot of the inmates do have hepatitis C and also tuberculosis. And I'm not exactly sure, but I know that he had, when he was actually put into the Department of Corrections, he had to go to a diagnostic center first before he was sent to the actual institution that housed him. And I would think that at that particular point, they were well aware of the hepatitis C, if he had it at that time, which evidently he did not. And so after that particular time, he was told that he had the hepatitis C.
So generally, from my understanding, that generally hepatitis C is associated with intravenous drug use, and I don't know whether or not there's any other type of way that you can contract that virus, but people can call in if they can identify with what we're talking about right here on 816-931-5534. The lines are open if you want to be part of this interview. And so you don't know how he contracted this particular illness?
No, I don't.
Okay. So the next question I'd like to ask is, how did he find himself in being incarcerated?
Well, he was accused of a murder that he did not commit, and that was basically because he was associated with me, because I am his sister. A gentleman that I was living with was actually selling drugs, and my brother told me, so I left there. And before I left there, he and I had a confrontation, and I called the police, but that happened back in 1989. So the police basically said, well, we can't go into his house and arrest him. The only thing we can do is just make sure that you're out of the house.
And okay, was this your brother?
No, this was a guy that I was living with.
Okay.
And what happened is when George told me that he was selling drugs, of course, he told me, you need to get away from there, and that's what I tried to do. And I did leave, but before I left, we did have a confrontation. And I called the police, like I said, but the police didn't really do anything. I mean, they didn't write up a police report or anything. So when this was a known drug house, and I was the person that didn't know it was a drug house until my brother pointed it out. So this particular gentleman, when the people that came in the house and shot him, he claimed that it was
shot
my brother.
Shot the friend.
Right, the guy that I was living with.
Did he die?
No, he didn't die.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But his brother did.
Okay. Right now that we have a caller on air, caller, you are on air. Hello?
Yes. Good morning, and thank you for being patient with me. We've had illness in the family and kind of put me off course. Mm-hmm. But I certainly did want to share with you concerning my loved one.
Okay.
In DOC.
And so, from my understanding, when I talked with you earlier, and this is Miss Law that is on the phone, and she has a fiance that's incarcerated. And tell us a little bit about that, too, as well, Miss Law.
Okay. Now, do we say where,
yes,
sir? I'm not sure. Okay.
Just,
that's in Cameron, Western Missouri Correctional Center. And he became ill this winter. Now, he's been in since 91 and been fairly healthy and not a big complainer when something's wrong. And he says that he really means it. He's not one to just go and wanting to get out and go for some exercise to the med house.
Mm-hmm.
He was sick, very sick. Started getting sick when I seen him on Sunday. I'm not going to give any dates and all that because I don't have it before me, sir. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know the days. He got sick on Sunday, was worse on Monday, went to medical, and they gave him a prescription Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back to his house and just kept getting worse and worse. And
what was the diagnosis?
His diagnosis was just a flu bug. Okay. Just a flu bug. And from Monday to Friday, he became very, very ill, even disillusioned. So he was not getting the proper treatment. Now, he had two emergency medicals, and one he had to walk to.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness for the guard, because the guard said, this man is very sick. He really needs care. So they took him then to medical, and then to still just give him the extra strength Tylenol and send him back. Well, I called inmate advocates. I called our state representative. And I was very, very pleased with my state representative's reaction. And
so,
they called.
Ms. Law,
yes.
One of the things that I want to ask, so basically, Ms. Fuller and yourself is fighting to make sure that these loved ones are getting their proper medication for whatever that ails them.
Yes, sir.
What your fight is, and the same with Ms. Fuller?
Yes.
It is very similar to Ms. Fuller.
Uh-huh.
But the only thing is, sir, what made it different is from Monday to Friday, Michael was so sick that he couldn't hardly walk. I called on Friday, and the head nurse said, I was really aggressive at this time. The weekend was coming. I thought he may not be alive come Monday to when he can go see that doctor again. And I was rather aggressive, and the state representative had called her also.
Mm-hmm.
So together with the state representative and myself, and I'm sure that the inmate advocate, she told me that she would talk to the doctor 30 minutes later. She calls me back and said, the doctor said he will begin treating him. Now, this is the real answer here. With 2,000 milligram antibiotics, 50 milligram, 500 milligram, four times a day, he will be coming to medical four times a day. We will be monitoring him four times a day. Now, this is for somebody that only needs extra strength Tylenol.
Okay. So one of the other questions, I asked this question with Ms. Fuller. How did your fiance end up in prison?
Well, this, I really, today it would have been called involuntary manslaughter.
Okay.
Okay, it was that type of thing. And
was it with an automobile?
91.
Was it with an automobile or a pistol? This is just for our audience so they can get the full gist of the what we're talking about and the full scope of the individuals that we are trying to help as it relates to them getting their medical help in the in the penitentiary. So how did he end up there?
Well, I'm just real reluctant to discuss that.
Okay.
I feel that's more of a private matter.
Okay.
Sir, but it would, like I said, today with a pistol be called involuntary manslaughter.
Okay.
And back then he was 29. He did not have the proper lawyer to do this case.
How long has he been in there?
Since 91. He has done his time. He goes up again for parole in December.
Okay.
We're believing he's going to get an out date. Because he has certainly done his time, and he's a changed man. He's a man now. At that time, he was a very young man, and we all make bad decisions, and nothing justifies anyone taking anyone's life. Please don't get me wrong, but he certainly does has done his time, and he is a changed human being today.
I have a question, and stay on the line. I have a question for Ms. Fuller, and because I didn't get a chance to really get this question in. Your brother, was he a drug user?
No.
No, he wasn't a drug user?
No.
Okay. So you, and because you mentioned that you didn't know how he contracted that hepatitis C or anything.
No.
Okay. So what else are you doing right now to assist your brother? Because you guys are fighting for your brother, and I can hear it. I can, you know, for her loved one as well. So what is some of the other things?
Well, basically, what we've done, my brother and myself, is we've contacted the I contacted the ACLU Director of Prison Affairs when he was transferred from Crossroads Correctional Center to South Central Correctional Center for treatment for his hepatitis C. And once he went there, they were very upset because he was very persistent about receiving the advanced treatment. So when he arrived, several of the officers accosted him and immediately placed him in at SEG. And that was the reason that I called ACLU Director of Prison Affairs to ask him to contact the Department of Corrections and ask them to administer the medication that he was actually transferred there for.
Mm-hmm.
And before he was transferred, I had contacted the former Senator Mary Groves Bland, and she was the only public official that did contact the DOC on George's behalf. So basically, it's a long drawn out process, considering he was told in 1996 that he had hepatitis C, and then he didn't receive any treatments until January of 2005.
Before I get back with Ms. Law, it was some incident, and your brother's name is George. Is it fair to say that? His name is George, and it was something about that when he received some type of Benadryl or something like this, that he wasn't able to have any food to, you know, to be put in him, so that way that medication doesn't affect him in a bad way. Am I right? Or
well, correct? What happened is that when he began the treatment, which it was actually interferon treatment, and the administrators would deny they wouldn't give him the Benadryl and other medications that he needed, which would cause sleep deprivation and constant pain.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also denied enough food to eat to absorb the medication so that it could be effective. So at that point, they just abruptly stopped the treatment.
Okay. And one of the, usually when I hear that, And it, was he a person that was always starting trouble? And I'm just this is it for the devil's advocate, so to speak. Was he causing problems and stuff? So why he was deprived of food?
No, it's most of the offenders constantly struggle with hunger in the Department of Corrections in Missouri. No, basically, it's just one of the things that's very well known, mm-hmm. that they use the food as punishment.
Okay.
So they knew that he was persistent about receiving the treatment, and this was a deterrent.
Mm.
And basically,
like a punishment.
Yes, almost everything in the institution is used as a form of punishment, mm-hmm. especially against African-American mm-hmm. inmates.
Okay. So Ms. Law is on the phone, and we're talking to her. And could you give your first name, Ms. Law?
Yes, Helena.
Helena, yes.
Yes.
Is anything that you can identify with what she's talking about, a little bit about being denied from food and stuff like that? Have you heard anything like that with your fiancé?
Yes, I've heard that the food is just, it's really high in sodium. He has high blood pressure, and the food is just really high in sodium, and it's very little. And we try to keep him going to the canteen to get food so that he can cook there at his cell with a crock pot. And, you know, it's just the food is very inadequate for you or me. We would not eat it, the food that they serve there. And, you know, I want to go back and touch base on his illness.
Yeah.
When that head nurse told me that there would be 2,000 milligrams.
Let me inject this.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, just for, like I was saying, that for the devil's advocate, generally that's not set up like a Hilton or a hotel somewhere where they have the food that would accommodate the inmates. This is a place that they're literally sending a message saying that don't come here. And if you
and
if you come here, you know, you're not going to get everything that you need. And so I think that would be if they were sitting here and maybe saying something like that. And that's just being the devil's advocate. And I relate to, you know, I can understand what you guys' battles are, and especially with loved ones and those that we were concerned about. So, but go ahead on and tell us a little bit more about what you were talking about as it relate to his medical issues.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I want to tell everyone that at the time they administered these 2,000 milligram of antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
he was going to medical four times a day, and he had an inmate walking him to it. He could not hardly walk, you know, and this was almost three blocks from his house where he was incarcerated to medical.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have little carts and means of getting people to medical, but they did not use that. I really felt that we had stirred up too much, and they were angry, and this is part of their way of showing that's jeopardizing his well-being. Now, he lost like 23 pounds within that week that I referred to from Monday to Friday, and then the next week of going to medical four times and being walked. He could not hardly eat, could not keep anything down. It was a very, very hard time for him. And I really felt it was so unfair. Now, if they are taking anything out on our loved ones because of them fighting back just a little bit with us out here being their voice, that's a very wrong thing. I don't know how they can live in their skin myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whether they're red, yellow, black, or white, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand
the
abuse that they can do.
Right. And I understand that, you know, especially with a person being human. And
that's
people
right.
do have medical issues, and they should understand that, and that people have medical needs, and that they should at least accommodate those prisoners. And so my heart goes out to the both of you as it relates to your loved ones. And so what are some of the other things that you're doing, Ms. Law? And because Ms. Fuller mentioned that how she had contacted her representatives, and I think that you alluded to the fact that you did too. Tell us a little bit about that, how you're doing that to help someone get on your side and fight for you and your loved one.
I'm glad you asked me that, because I believe that anyone that has a loved one in there, this point I'm going to make is very significant. Our state representative does just what it says, represents, and that's representing us. We want the best in there that we can have. That's why we vote. That's why we have a right to complain a little bit if we vote. Folks, if we don't vote, we don't have a right to complain. But that state representative is for us. He is for us. And he will make that call when there's a call needed for the fight for our loved one, whether it's about a health issue, the food issue, you know, getting denied parole over and over, especially when they have good conduct. My loved one has very good conduct and has been very involved in programs and classes and things, has an excellent record. And yes, he did take that life, but yes, he has paid his dues.
I know one thing, Ms. Law, that if I was in there, I would love to have the both of you on my side fighting the way that you are fighting for your loved ones, and that's for sure. Back to Ms. Fuller.
Thank you.
As it relates to what she was talking about, contacting, you know, representatives, how has that been, and have you been doing any of that?
I have contacted many state representatives and state senators throughout my brother's incarceration, but I have had very few that actually act on his behalf. And as I said earlier, the former Senator Mary Groves Bland was the only public official that actually contacted the DOC while I was on the phone with her and held a conversation with them to try to assist in any way that she possibly could.
So you haven't had is the great success that Ms. Law has been having with her representative.
No, I haven't for many, many years. There was a representative named Mr. Troop in St. Louis, and he was very, very helpful in helping in any way he possibly could. But I have contacted other state representatives. In fact, the last ones were housed in Licking, Missouri, and they basically just send letters to the DOC that you send to them and act as if they really have no control at all.
May I add something at this
sure.
time
Go
that
ahead.
Might help Ms. Fuller? And I learned this through School of Hard Knocks, but the main representative that we want to contact is our own, not theirs where they're at, not in that county, but our own state representative, the one that we are going to matter whether we vote for them or not. That is the one that we need to contact, Ms. Fuller.
Right.
If that helps you.
Thank you, Beth, for that information, and I'm sure that, you know, that she's probably going to utilize that information in some kind of way. But our time is just about up in this segment. First of all, let me say thank you, Ms. Law, for coming on the air with us and talking about this very important issue. And we just hope the best for the both of you. And remember that you have been in tune to KKFI 90.1, Jaws bowels of justice, and I'll see you in a minute.
Now the calendar for March 17th. You or your organization can help Harvesters and the USDA feed hungry children in Kansas City this summer. Learn how at the Cafe Summit. That's 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday, March 21st at the Southeast Community Center, 4201 East 63rd Street, KCMO. There is a need for sponsors to operate feeding sites around the area to feed children, and volunteers to help. To find out how you can take part or for information on the Cafe Summit, contact Councilman Scott Walker at 816-513-6503 or email cafe, that's spelled K-A-F-E, at kcmo.org. The Warehouseman Training Program was developed in conjunction with employers and has a good record of placing their students in employment. If you are an ex-offender, veteran, or displaced worker in need of training or upgrading your skills as a warehouseman, this program can help. If your organization funds work opportunities or training for those in need, they will work with you to get your clients trained and employed. Check out their website, www.warehousemantraining.com. The Racial Justice Committee of the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church is sponsoring a multicultural book circle reading of Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow: Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. Each group will consist of 8 to 12 members that will read and discuss the book. For more information, contact Janet Brown Moss at 816-695-0033 or email at janetbridgeworks@gmail.com. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found at the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Good morning. We are in our second half of this broadcast, and I just want to say good morning to you. You're in tune to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and in the studio with me is Miss Clara Fuller, and her and I will be talking about the inferior medical care and the lack of medical care in the Missouri as it relates to the DOC direction of Department of Correction. Am I correct, Miss Fuller?
Yes, that's the Department of Corrections, yes.
Also, Ms. We had Ms. Helena Law. She was on the phone, and you can come on the phone as well by dialing 816-931-5534. So if you want to get into this topic and talk about a little bit of the things that we're going to be talking about, and if you have just tuned in and you know anybody that might are incarcerated and they're not getting their medical needs met, call in on the station and you have a chance to voice your opinion right here on Jaws of Justice this morning. Good morning, Ms. Fuller.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm glad to have you here this morning. And we have been talking about, and for the people that are just now tuning in, tell us a little bit about this issue that you're having with DOC, which is the Department of Correction, and as it relates to a loved one that you have, which is your brother. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, basically, that the Department of Corrections did everything they could to discourage my brother from participating in the hepatitis program, which is a very, very harsh program, basically because it takes, it's a 7-day-a-week program, and you have to go to medical at least 4 times a day. And right now, my brother goes to take his first dose of medication at 3:45 a.m., and the first count is at 6 a.m. His second dose is at 8 a.m., and the second count is at 11 a.m. His third dose is at 12 p.m., and the third count is at 4 p.m., and the fourth dose is at 8 p.m., and the last count is at 10 p.m. And this is George's daily routine, 7 days a week.
And that's his name, George?
Yes, his name is George.
Okay.
And these times also coincide with other appointments that he has to keep, other medical appointments, caseworker appointments, program and recreational activities. And George can only attempt to rest between 4:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. when other offenders are moving around in the wing.
So how long George has been incarcerated?
He's been incarcerated since 1991.
91, that's a long time.
Yes.
And if anyone that is listening to the sound of our voice this morning, you be sure to call in at 931, that's 816-931-5534, and you can get in on this conversation as well if you can identify or you understand the system. And he has what type of issue that causes him to be on medication?
He has hepatitis C.
Yes, hepatitis C. I mentioned this in the earlier segment that generally hepatitis C is associated with intravenous drug use, and so. But you stated that you didn't know how he contracted this particular virus. Had he ever mentioned that to you ever?
No, he hasn't. I do know from talking to medical that a lot of the inmates do have hepatitis C and tuberculosis in the Missouri prison system. I've never really asked like why or how, but I know that the conditions are conducive to having various medical problems.
So are you, I know that we're not medical doctors or anything, but are you kind of mentioning or stating that hepatitis C is an airborne type of virus, or?
I'm not exactly sure of, you know, hepatitis C is airborne or not. I'm not exactly sure about that, so I can't say. That's mm-hmm. some research that I have not done that I probably will undertake at this point.
Mm-hmm. Because someone else, and we're sure that other people in the penitentiary are hepatitis C. And so, I would be curious and would love to know if anybody have that information that's listening to us, that they can call in 816-931-5534 and tell us whether or not that by sitting on a stool or eating from the same silverware, could they contract this virus, if it is a virus. So I'm just wondering about that because you don't have any information about that. And, that's kind of like on my mind is how can, you know, that means that anybody can catch the hepatitis C if you're in the room with someone. But I know that in close quarters that, you know, a lot of things can be transmitted. So, but tell us a little bit about, because you and I was talking about your issues as it relate to getting some outside help with this particular issue as it relate to your brother. And so you contacted some of the representatives, and so you haven't had that much luck. And you said that you've been working on this for how many years?
Actually, since 1991. And basically, as your telephone guest said, that it's a good idea to contact my representative, but I actually live in Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay. We have a caller on air, and caller, you are on air at Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. Go ahead.
Hey, my name is Justin, and I just wanted to share what I know about hepatitis C.
Okay.
So you're right that you can get it by sharing needles, like, intravenously, and also sexual contact can spread it. The other thing is, it's true that sort of if a lot of people have it, if you just come into contact with blood, so it's very, my understanding at least, is that it can be very persistent, whereas some other bloodborne viruses don't survive long out of the body. Hepatitis C is very persistent, so it's true that that it's easier to spread just sort of by contact with bodily fluids that way. But my understanding is that those are the ways that it's spread.
Oh, so in other words, that it's a blood-to-blood, not transmitted through toilets or shaking hands or anything like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you have a sore on your hand and you touch someone else's blood or bodily fluids, then there's a risk there. But, yeah, blood-to-blood or other bodily fluids is the way.
I see. So what about kissing an individual?
Kissing? No, unless you both have open sores in the mouth area, then, of course, there's a risk to it. But
okay. Thank you, caller. You gave us some great information. We have other callers on the line, and thank you, caller, and have a great day.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you're on air.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're on air.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a good friend who's a Muslim brother in his 60s, and he told me recently that he had hepatitis C. This brother never used drugs, I'm sure of that. He says he thinks he got exposed to it in the military with all the inoculations that they get when they go in.
Mm.
And also, my brother, who's a little bit older than me, about 60, early 60s, he got exposed to it also. He's never been a drug user. And how he got exposed, I don't know. But when my friend who's in the military mentioned that inoculation, they use the same needle they used to anyway back in when they were going in the late 60s, early 70s. So I'm thinking now maybe that's where my brother got exposed. It can be in your system for a long time. Doesn't have to turn into hepatitis C, but they can tell if you've been exposed to it. And sometimes they can take treatments over about a year period to prevent it from manifesting in your system.
Mm.
Treatments are real severe, give you psychotic side effects, suicidal thoughts, and all kind of stuff. But you don't have to be a drug user to get hepatitis C, even though that's common understanding. And a lot of people may be that end up with it, but not everybody. So
that's pretty scary that individuals that are unaware that they have the hepatitis C virus and have sexual intercourses with women that they can spread it or vice versa and spread this disease. So, you know, it's scary, you know, out there, you know, that people can easily.
Well, it's also scary to find out that you could have got it from the Uncle Sam, from the military, from the inoculations, the shots they give you. They give you all kind of stuff when you first come in, and that's frightening to me.
But that was pretty loose back in the day that you were talking about. I think
but people are still alive.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And they're still being affected by it.
Right. Behind the fact that those people have been affected and they're passing that stuff on and not realizing or not knowing that they have that virus.
Mm-hmm.
And so this
I don't know that it's passed on as easily as that. I don't know about that. I don't know that it's passed on as easily as somebody who got exposed to it. And then when they I've never heard of my brother passing on to anybody. And I don't know if this other guy. So I don't know if it's like venereal disease where it's just automatic. When you have sex, you get it. I don't think it's like that.
Well, our previous caller called and he said that, yes, anytime that there's fluid or blood that is transmitted, then this is how you can transfer that virus back and forth.
It's a possibility. It's not a sure thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, caller. Thank you for calling on air. And tell us a little bit, Ms. Fuller, some of the other battles that you have been going in over there.
Basically, as far as the treatment is concerned, like I said, it's very harsh treatment, and it causes, as the gentleman says, psychological problems, and there are at least about 65 different side effects of the ribavirin and interferon. And also he takes a medication that's called Ventrilis, and there are at least 19 different common side effects as well. So there are a lot of different side effects, and he when he goes to get his medication each day, and the medical basically gives him hot Ensure to drink, which causes him to regurgitate or gag, and they really can give him fruit instead, but again, they use that as punishment.
Okay. We have another caller on air, and also I want to make a point that this disease can be transferred by tattoos and things like that, and that's how some people can get contracted hepatitis C. Caller, you on air.
Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Hi. This is Rebecca Hamilton, and I wanted to mention I applaud your guests for their persistence. I wanted to talk a little bit about the legal standard as one way of making sure that your loved ones get medical treatment. The law requires that they provide adequate care for serious medical conditions, really for any, and they can be civilly liable under the Civil Rights 1983 actions if they are deliberately indifferent to serious medical conditions. So a key to that, if people need medical attention, they need to make sure that those there that are in control of their medical care are well aware of their situation. So that needs to be documented if possible. And then, of course, you don't want to wait until they've suffered serious medical repercussions, but that is one way to ensure or at least try to improve the kind of medical treatment that you might receive while you're incarcerated.
Carla, can you give us a little bit of your background?
I am an attorney in the local area, and I do represent a person who was seriously harmed while incarcerated, and his medical conditions were basically ignored, although he repeatedly asked for help. And ultimately, he broke his back. I won't go into any more detail other than to say that he made his medical needs known, but really the system there sometimes have doctors that only show up once a week. They may not have any training for some of the more common illnesses that occur in prisons, so they're really ill-equipped to address. And one of the problems that is very common in our prisons and jails is mental illness. And very few prisons and very few jails are equipped to handle those kinds of serious medical conditions. And people can die. People can, all kinds of problems can occur. And unfortunately, those kinds of issues are ignored for the most part.
Wow, you have really brought a lot of light to this subject this morning, and I really appreciate you calling in. But stay on the line for a moment, unless we got another caller. But I don't think we do, and maybe you can address. We do have another caller, and your name is
John.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, sir. the attorney. What your name?
My name is Rebecca Hamilton.
Rebecca Hamilton. Is there a number that someone can, maybe my guest can get in touch with you?
Sure. 913-689-9080.
Give that one more time, please.
Sure. 913-689-9080.
Thank you very much, caller. We have another caller on air, and I appreciate you.
Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Oh, you too.
Caller, you're on air. Hello.
Okay. Yes, how you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Hey, good. I am on air. Yes, I've done a little bit of research on hepatitis C, and so they've said, and I don't know if this has been brought up or not, I just got in on part of this conversation, but they say that one of the largest, the explosion of hepatitis C will be basically the result of prison tattoos. Because, you know, anything that you get in a prison is not sterile and not good to work with. You know, and that's, you know, will be a major cause of hepatitis more than passing needles and definitely more than having sex. Sex is a very minimal chance of having any
passed on through sex.
Right. It's prison tattoos will be the worst problem. Is the worst problem right now.
And there's a lot of individuals are getting tattooed, and I can imagine, especially with the young people that are getting tattooed, that I'm sure that they probably have went into some places that are not that sterile.
Yeah. And you have to take into consideration back in the old days, like, you get an Old Navy tat or something like that, there's a good chance that people that are, are in their 70s and don't realize, 60s and 70s, don't realize they have hepatitis C. It's just something that takes years and years for it to build in your system. And you may never know it. It may come out as a liver cancer or something like that. Something that could have been blocked by
medications or something like that. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you, caller.
That's what a lot of it is.
Thank you. You've helped us in this this broadcast and with the information that has been put out. Thank you very much, and you have a great day, caller. You're on air, caller. You're on air.
Hello? Okay. Hi, this is Craig. I'm also an attorney over in Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had three clients in the past that just thought I'd share their experiences with medical care in Wyandotte County. I had two that had epilepsy. One of them, they refused to give him the brand of medication that worked for him because they wanted to give him the generic that was like a fraction of the cost. And so twice he ended up in the hospital as a result before they finally agreed to give him the one he needed. And then the other client that I had that had epilepsy, she actually fell down the flight of steps and broke her leg as a result of not getting the medication she needed when she had a seizure. And then I had one client who had gotten a spider bite that became infected on his toe, and by the time the doctor at the jail would finally certify that he needed to be seen at the hospital, it was too late, and he had to have his toe amputated.
Hmm.
Oh.
So are you representing in some of these clients?
Right. Those were all three that I represent in criminal cases. I didn't represent them in any of the civil cases.
Mm-hmm. I see. What are your information about, sir, about the Criminal Justice Task Force that can help advocate some of this issue? I don't know why that it hasn't been addressed even longer, and especially with this type of thing happening in our criminal justice system. And So are you familiar with this organization?
I have heard of it, but I'm not familiar enough to comment on it, though.
Okay, what about the mothers incarcerated, sons and daughters?
I'm not familiar with that one either.
Okay, so is it anything that you can work on in terms of, let's say, for instance, with my guest, Ms. Fuller, assist her in some kind of way with her fight with her brother being incarcerated and having hepatitis C? And is it anything that possibly that you can point her towards getting some more help?
I don't know. I just tuned in. I was late getting on. But Jeff has my phone number, and if she wants to give me a call, she'd be welcome to. I don't know what state she...
She's from Kansas, in the same state you're in.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, if Jeff wants to give her my number, I'd be glad to talk to her and see if there's anything I could help with.
Okay, and thank you very much, sir, for calling in and giving us this type of information. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
All right, thanks. Thank you. And if anybody might be interested in that criminal justice task force that's listening, the number is 816-468-7894. And if you're interested in the mothers of incarcerated sons and daughters, you may call Beverly at 816-337-5876. I'll give that number again for Justice Task Force, and that's 816-468-7894. Again, with the incarcerated sons and daughters, and you would ask for Miss Beverly, and that number is 816-337-5876. And in the studio with us, that we have Miss Clara Fuller, and she's fighting a battle for her brother by the name of George that has been incarcerated since 1991. And so she's definitely a great advocate to have on one side. And I know that her brother is very proud of her and for what she's been doing. But we have about 2 minutes, about 1 minute on the air. Could you kind of give us a little closing of what you battle and the things that you've been going?
Well, the main thing is that the Department of Corrections in Missouri should stop using food and also one's illness as a means of punishment. And my brother is struggling through this particular advanced treatments for hepatitis C, which makes it very difficult for him to even sleep 2 hours of the day because he wants to stay alive.
Mm. You've been listening to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1, and I hope you have a great day. This is Melvin Merritt, and it's been your host, and I thank all the callers that called in, and everyone have a great day.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know. Maybe I'm supposed to cry. If nobody ever knows the way I feel, that's all right.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio. not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clemmer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Friday. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Echo Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following is Talia Michelle speaking at RAMP, the Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition Convention, just last weekend in Houston.
And she's not the only one. My friend here in Hayes County, her daughter was having 300 seizures a week. I shouldn't have said her name because she's committed a felony. She committed a felony. She's a church-going, tax-paying, Republican-voting, conservative Christian mother with a child who has 300 seizures a week, and she committed a felony. And I'll tell you what, that girl's doing really well right now. And dear, she doesn't regret what she's done. She only regrets that her state and her state officials and the law do not support her and her child and her family. And I'm mad about that. I'm upset about that. And if you aren't, we're made of different stuff. Don't you worry, sweetheart. That CBD portion will get passed. It's happening next year. That's a no-brainer. But you're right. It's not enough. It's not good enough. Because this isn't just about pediatric epilepsy. I have mothers contacting me from California, contacting Amy. Amy's been chatting with one of them from California, and the child was banging his head into a window and knocking out the glass, and there were scars in that child's head. And blood. And he's 15, and he can't talk, and the mother is looking at institutionalizing him. And she was on this waiting list for the Charlotte's Web that you're talking about, the CBD cannabis oil. On a waiting list for months and months and months. And you know what she did? She went out and bought some edibles with THC in it. And she gave it to her son. I'm here to tell you that child is not banging his head anymore into glass. He is not biting his arms. He is saying words, sentences. He's using an augmentative communication device. And he's excited because he can communicate with his parents. Do not tell me that it is okay to dope that child up with an antipsychotic or an antidepressant, or some kind of benzosulfonylamine-goobity-goop that has a gazillion side effects, so the kid can barely tell what room he's in. But he can't have a little THC because it might get him stoned?
Again, that was Italia Michelle speaking to Republicans against marijuana prohibition. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.